Hello, hello. We are back. It is Lily and Emma on The Real World. You are, as mentioned, listening to The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. And for those of you who are not in the know, The Real World is UBC Film Society's radio segment where we talk about things, all things film related. So not only do we host this radio show, but we also put on various film screenings throughout the week and many more movie-related events. For more info on FilmSock events and updates, most of them are on our Instagram page at UBC Film Society. And our next screening will be in The Norm tomorrow at 6 p.m., and it will be Elevator to the Gallows, followed by Out of the Past at 8 p.m. And we'll be right back talking about movies that take place in New York right after this break.
We are UBC Electronica, and we love electronic music such as Run for them life when I step into the jungle. We offer DJ workshops, open decks, pop-up parties, and more. Follow our socials such as Instagram, Discord, or join us through email ubcelectronica@gmail.com.
Knock, knock. Guess who? MRG Live coming right back at you, this time with a whole new list of upcoming live shows by your favorite artists. Hear this. Marika Hackman, Faye Webster, Empress of, Peter Cat Recording Co., and The Rare Occasions are a few of the artists MRG Live is bringing to you. Follow at MRG Live Official on Instagram to stay tuned with all the artists performing near you.
Looking for an audioscape to put your mind at ease?
Landscapes by Dune is a musical journey through sampling and field recording. From the busy streets of Toronto to BC's picturesque landscapes, the Belgian artist recorded an array of sounds during his travels across Canada. Landscapes will be released on Pop Qatari Records Bandcamp on December 8th and will be available on all streaming platforms on December 15th. For more information, check out at Dune as Dune on Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud.
Picture this. You're walking into your local record store and start skimming the many records until you find an album that you recognize. You pick out the album, check the track list, and maybe only recognize a couple songs. Now you have to listen to the whole album, right? Well, why not do it together? On Discali, every show runs you through an entire album and breaks down key parts and songs that make up an album's aesthetic, art, and story. I'm your host, Oliver, and join me every Friday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. in talking about all things music. Want to discover more albums, artists, record pressings, and concerts? I got you. That's every Friday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., so tune in to Discali to discover different discographies and add to the musical discourse.
All right, and we are back with a very special guest, and this is Zach.
Hello.
Yeah, been on before, we'll probably be on again.
Hopefully. I love The Real World.
Familiar voice on The Real World. But as mentioned before, we are talking about movies that take place or like surround New York on this episode. So I'll start by asking the obvious question of, have you guys been to New York? No.
No.
It's just vibes.
I've never even been outside Canada before.
So wow.
I'm such a onlooker
on
the cities, but...
No kidding.
Yeah. Have you?
I have. I have been once and I did not like it, so...
How did we land on this topic? Only one of us has been to New York, didn't like it, and the other two of us have never been.
I guess there's something about it, you know?
It's just an iconic city, you know?
Yeah.
It's like Paris or Tokyo or London, you know? It's just one of those where, it just has a certain culture to it that, you know, needs to be discussed.
Yeah, I feel like there's definitely culture around New York. Even if you haven't been there, like, you just grow up, like, knowing of New York.
Yeah, you know the Statue of Liberty. The Empire State Building.
Yeah.
You know 9/11.
Oh, yeah. So ingrained in our culture. But yeah, I think we'll kick it to you to start, Zach, with your movies for New York.
So Yeah, like there's when Lily and Emma first came to me about this episode, I kind of felt overwhelmed because there's so much to choose from. Like there's so many amazing movies that represent New York. But there's one in particular that like really rings true to me, and that's Taxi Driver. Taxi Driver, you know, if someone says that that's their favorite movie, run, because it's it's quite the doozy. But for me, it was the first movie that really changed everything for me, in the sense that, you know, before I saw it, I was watching like DreamWorks or Disney animated movies, or you know, screwball comedies with like Will Ferrell or Jim Carrey or like Mike Myers or something, right? But then I saw this very young. I think I was like 10 or 11 when I saw it, and it just clicked. Like it was one of the, like I always said, it's like the first grown-up movie that I really understood, because you know, you just, it's about this guy, this Vietnam veteran, Travis Bickle. And he just becomes a taxi driver because he has nothing better to do with his time. And you're kind of just watching him float around the city and interact with different people. There's like a Martin Scorsese cameo in it that's a little racist. But, you know, I wouldn't put it past, you know, someone from New York in the 70s. There's also like the subplot with the mayoral candidate, or like the president's candidate or something like that. And he falls in love with like one of the women that work for him. And he like takes her to like a porno theater as a first date. So it's very much an incel movie. But it's just such an artistic statement, I guess, on New York at the time. And just like the aftermath of the Vietnam War, and how the veterans were kind of just like pushed to the side and treated like nothing, and they just become taxi drivers or, you know, other menial jobs. And, you know, they can almost be like a ticking time bomb in a sense, and you never know when they're going to go off. So have either of you seen Taxi Driver?
I have not seen Taxi Driver, actually. I think one of the only Scorsese films I've ever seen is Hugo.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is crazy, but, yeah. You know. Yeah, have you seen?
No, I haven't seen it. I definitely want to, just in terms of this iconic collaboration also between Scorsese and De Niro. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It, in my opinion, it's De Niro's best. Yeah. It's Scorsese's best for me, too. But, oh, yeah.
I know this is considered, like, one of the greatest films ever made. So, like, how do you think, like, the portrayal of, like, New York kind of, like, plays a role in this film? Like, do you think there's a very distinct look to it?
Again, take this with a grain of salt, because I've never been to New York. Yeah. But I think it just looks phenomenal for, like, you know, like, what it was at the time. Like, there's this very famous line where he's like, I'm going to wash the streets clean of the filth that New York is plagued by, or, you know, it's something along those lines. Yeah. But, you know, it just goes to show just like, yeah, like the down and dirty, the gritty, like, it's a very filthy movie, but like in a, I guess, enlightening way, because at a certain point, Travis, Robert De Niro meets Jodie Foster. Mm. And I forgot her name in the movie, but she is a child prostitute in the movie. And that
Iris.
And she was apparently like way too young in that movie to like shoot some certain scenes, so they had to like get her sister to fill in. Oh. Because yeah, she was like 13, 14, 12. Yeah, like she was young. So, but yeah, like again, that just reinforces the idea of just like New York being a filthy environment in that time, in the 70s. You know, just from a movie standard, too, it's just such a gorgeous movie in terms of just like how it looks, how it sounds, how, you know, everyone is in the movie, how the performances are. It really is a special, special movie. But like, you know, like I said, you know, if someone is like, ooh, this is my favorite movie of all time, and no other movie can compare, it's like, yeah, run. You know, like it's
red flag.
It is a red flag movie. Absolutely. You know, if you see this in someone's Letterboxd top four, you know, just give them an unfollow. But it's an amazing movie. So I just can't recommend it highly enough. It's a classic. It's almost 50 years old, which is crazy to think.
Wow,
so yeah, 50 years in New York looking grimy and scummy and stuff. So, yeah.
50 years of those New York rats running around.
Oh, yeah.
In the subways.
And in the taxis.
Oh. My gosh. But, yeah, do you have any other sort of New York movies?
I mean, there's so many again. Like I said, it was kind of overwhelming picking some movies because, like, when Lily and Emma came up to me and were like, okay, New York movies, I'm like, okay, I want to talk about this one. But wait, there's this one. Oh, wait, how about this one, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the ones I recently watched or rewatched with my friend who hadn't seen it was Do the Right Thing. And that's another I'd say that's one of, if not the most important movies made in the last couple decades. You know, it's a very powerful movie with an important message that everyone should watch once. But it's framed in, like, the hottest day of New York. Yeah. And everyone was just sweaty and irritated. And you're just watching the camera kind of go between members in this community. And you just see how everyone interacts. And you see how, you know, this very unique to New York community is. I mean, it takes place in Brooklyn and Brooklyn. But yeah, and that I forgot to say too, but that's a Spike Lee movie. Spike Lee from New York. You know, if anyone, you know, if I would trust anyone with showing a New York movie or making a New York movie, it would be Spike Lee because he just has so many New York movies in his catalog. I mean, there's this one called 25th Hour with Edward Norton, and like it's about him about to go to prison. And like the last day he's like out with his friends and stuff. But it's all like the backdrop is like in the like week or two after 9/11 happened.
Oh, interesting.
So and that's another thing I think which is important when talking about New York movies is that distinction of like the pre-9/11 and the post-9/11.
Yeah.
Because some movies we'll talk about later, we'll see how vastly different New York is in that sense, and especially like someone like Taxi Driver or Do the Right Thing or, you know, When Harry Met Sally. That's another one I'll talk about later. But like these are all pre-9/11 movies. You just kind of see this environment and it just looks so almost like mythical in a sense, at least from my perspective as I've never been. It just kind of seems like. Like the setting is a character in and of itself, and in something like Do the Right Thing, it really enforces the message. And I can't speak highly enough. So again, have either of you seen this movie?
I can't say I have, actually. This was another one that it's like it's been on my watch list for so long that it's almost like intimidating to take it on.
Yeah,
but I really want to see this one because I know, like, even like reading about like the process of like how they like wrote and like shot this movie and like like how quickly it came about. It's like you can tell this came from like a very like personal place.
Yes, clearly.
Because I know they filmed it in like a single Brooklyn block or something like that. So it's like you're just like effectively capturing this like one tiny little microcosm of New York. Like it's not, you know, you're not getting those grand like sweeping Empire State Building shots or like Statue of Liberty. It's like that's not the New York that we're looking at here.
All you get is like Sal's Pizzeria and like the Korean Mart on the corner, and then everyone else is like homes, and then there's Samuel Jackson is like a radio host in it.
Oh, yeah.
So he's like kind of us right now.
He
just drops so many great one-liners. He's just like, you know, that's the truth, Ruth, or you know, shit like that. It's a movie full of character.
Yeah.
And it's just bleeding from every single point with just like just enthusiasm and just like energy. It's a phenomenal movie. There is that weird scene with Rosie Perez that she was very uncomfortable with, which, you know, if you watch, you'll kind of know the scene. You know, it is really Spike Lee's like magnum opus. And this is, like I said, it's a movie that everyone should watch. And it's like my favorite thing to say about this movie is that it was released the same year this movie, Driving Miss Daisy, won Best Picture.
Yeah.
And Driving Miss Daisy is like about, it's essentially like Green Book in the sense where it's like Morgan Freeman is like, he's driving around this old racist lady. Mm-hmm. And throughout the movie, he like makes her not racist. And it's like, wow, you know, give this an Oscar, as opposed to like, you know, these very like this movie filled with like Public Enemy and, you know, just fight the power, just like, you know, because like the whole plot is set into motion when the pizzeria, it's Sal's Pizzeria, it's owned by this Italian family. They only have Italian Americans on the wall, and I think it's Buggin' Out, who is played by Giancarlo Esposito, who is Gus from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. He basically is like, "Hey, Sal, why are there no black people on the wall? You only have black people eating here.
Yeah.
Why can't we have representation on the wall?" And he's like, "Okay, if you want that, open your own pizzeria." So that kind of like starts this, it's like the little pebble that starts the avalanche, and then it just leads to this incredible climax. And, it's both heartbreaking, but just enlightening. And it's just such it is such an important movie. And it's one of those that everyone should watch once.
Yeah. Totally. I think you nailed it. I mean, I saw it a while ago and I could use a brush up, but just in terms of like the energy that all of the performances give, all the way to just the vibrant color scheme of the film itself. Yes. It's got a lot of energy going for it.
Yeah.
And it just feels hot too.
Yeah.
I remember it was like a couple years ago, Vancouver had this crazy heat wave where it was like 40 degrees here, and I made sure to watch Do the Right Thing during that time. And it just amplified the experience so much because I was sweating so much and just it just felt like I was like in that setting, in the environment, and it's a very, very special movie, and it's, you know, colorful, vibrant, energetic. Mm-hmm. It's got so many great scenes. Incredible ending.
It's interesting what you say about Spike Lee entrusting him to like depict this neighborhood, because he grew up in Brooklyn, I think. Yeah. And I was just thinking about some of the other directors we're going to talk about today, or not talk about today, we'll see, who have, like, time and time again circle back to some sort of representation of New York or just telling a story they want to show in New York. And so we've got, like, Martin Scorsese.
Absolutely.
Grew up in New York.
Yeah.
And he comes back to it time and time again. The first collaboration I'm pretty sure he had with De Niro was Mean Streets, which is also in New York. Mm-hmm. And then we've also got Woody Allen, and I'm not sure we're going to get the chance to talk about any of his films today, but his work like is iconic New York films.
Yeah.
From like Manhattan to Annie Hall, like returning back to this place of New York. And I don't really know of any other city that like you find directors and so much of their filmography like coming back to this place, no matter what the story is. Like, this is a setting that just about anything can happen in. And I think that's going to be represented in this episode, because we've got quite the range of like devastating stories to like really awesome kids taking on the streets of New York, really fun vibes. So
The only other city I can really think of that even holds a candle to New York in that sense is like Paris.
Yeah.
But like, even then it's like, you know, how many new wave movies are there that like, you know, take place in Paris, really? Like, there, it's really much more of like a whole France thing as opposed to just isolated in Paris. Yeah. Whereas New York, it's just like, I mean, they call it like the concrete jungle, you know, it's own beast.
Put it in any movie and it's immediately a character. Mm-hmm.
And just the amount of enclaves it has, like Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, you know, just all these different places that are so unique, but they're so, you know, they kind of work together cohesively in a sense.
Look at you and your New York geography.
Oh, geography minor here.
My gosh. Yeah, New York movies. They're pretty crazy. Any final mentions for the city?
I mean, there was I did mention When Harry Met Sally earlier, and I think that's an all-timer for me. It's just like, you know, I think I should mention it after mentioning Taxi Driver and Do the Right Thing. We'll keep it lighthearted a little bit, but that's just another one where it's just like, it's such a lovely movie to watch, and you know, it you just see the culture of New York, you know, with like the New Year's Eve stuff, how it revolves around that. And like, you know, always when you like, when it's New Year's Eve and you turn on the TV, you always go to like the ball dropping from Times Square.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Times Square, New York, like, come on now.
Oh, yeah. But this movie like came out the same year as Do the Right Thing.
It did.
It's crazy because I feel like they're depicting like two totally different New Yorks. Like it feels like almost two different cities.
It's like Brooklyn versus Manhattan.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it feels like that. But it's just, you guys have seen when this one.
I haven't.
Yeah. Oh.
Total blindside.
Oh, for three for me.
Yeah.
I saw it. I love it. I mean, we'll get into this later. We won't do too much rom-com talk because we could do a whole episode on New York as the set for rom-coms, like this, like the place of all places. Like, again, like New York is often described as some sort of land of possibility. Mm-hmm. And this idea of like finding a relationship or like love in New York is like a very romanticized idea. And it's got a lot to do with like chance encounters, rom-coms. Like that's a very like critical characteristic of the genre. Chance encounters, running in the streets, like,
yes.
And where else better for that to happen?
Yeah, and that's when Harry met Sally to a T. I mean, they meet by chance three times.
Yeah.
And it's on the third time they become friends.
Wow.
And then a year later they become lovers.
Wow. New York, clearly a very multifaceted city, so.
We got to get over there someday.
I know.
Apparently.
Real world field trip to New York.
Please.
But just to close out this little section, we'll hear the theme from Taxi Driver, and then we'll be right back to inundate you with more New York talk.
Jazzy
theme from Taxi Driver, apparently.
Yeah. That's not the one in the movie, but that's the perfect rendition for the real world.
Oh, yeah. Because, famously jazzy show.
The real world.
That's what they say, actually.
Every time I come out of here, I'm like, got to listen to jazz music now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those are great picks.
Yeah. Thank you. No, real versatile. That was
real
cool.
Versatile for the real world.
Oh, as it should be. Now we'll turn to you, Lily, for your New York movie picks.
Okay, the first one I want to talk about, this is a 1999 documentary called The Gods of Times Square. I kind of randomly picked it. I wanted to do a documentary. This is by Richard Sandler, who I think I'd heard of. He's got a lot of documentaries about New York, so we could have really gone with anything, but this is the one we went with. Basically, it's following Times Square, and it's documenting like changes that occur in the area over the span of 6 years, like throughout the 90s. And he kind of documents the transformation in terms of a shift away from like family businesses and what's described as colorful characters who made the intersection a speaker's corner and turning the area. It eventually turns more into a real estate hotspot. And he's basically just capturing this pivotal moment in New York history, which I feel like I needed. Again, I haven't gone to New York. I needed a bit of like a historical reference. And I feel like this was pretty educational. I didn't know that this is what Times Square used to look like. Yeah. Again, like what I know it from, what we're talking about is like New Year's Eve, like watching the ball drop or whatever in Times Square. And you'd think of like all of the big screens going up. I feel like I follow celebrities who will like see an advertisement for their film like shown in Times Square, and like that's an accomplishment. Like they'll post with it. Like that's what I think about when I think of Times Square.
Like, didn't Charlie XCX just shut down Times Square for a concert like a couple days ago?
Really?
Like, I think she did. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Oh my god.
That's pretty brat of her.
Yeah. Brats.
But yeah, like you're saying, it's that New York in that doc is so different from what we see today.
Exactly. And so I feel like it kind of grounded me in like, okay, where was this area coming from? And at least from what I took away from it is the area has shifted a lot away from a space for like people who live around there to like people visiting and like seeing these advertisements and seeing like whatever. Touristy shops have always been there, at least from like the images that the director Richard Sandler shows. And he's got like some awesome imagery. Like we're changing from, he's got these like slow motion kind of cutting between people who are unhoused in the area and like interviewing. He's got some reoccurring characters who come on and like speak about their religious beliefs. Yeah. And then in the second half of the film, the pace is picking up. And I think he's trying to show us like pace is picking up in a lot of ways around here, like in terms of buildings are coming down one after another and what's being put up. He's got this big focus on like Disney stores coming into the area.
Yeah.
And there's this huge emphasis on like the slower, like people to people conversation style area to this like passerby. Everyone's not really looking at each other. Mm-hmm. They're just going into the Disney store or like over to like look at the advertisements on the big screens. And I don't know, I learned a lot from it.
Well, there's that guy too, who's like Mickey Mouse is the Antichrist.
Yeah.
And he just keeps screaming at the guy and just like,
yeah,
you know, it's, yeah.
Like I mean, it's called Gods of Times Square. Like a big focus of it is like what people religiously believe.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because I just watched, like I watched half of it last night. I fell asleep watching it. And then I watched like the last hour of it before coming in. And yeah, it's just such a, it almost felt like, you know, like an Eric Andre show sketch where like you just see these just like they're real people, but like they just feel like caricatures of people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just, it's such a wonderful mosaic of just like, you know, just religion and how, you know, people preach their religion in this one given area and how identity interjects with that religion. Cause there's like, it, like you were saying, the first part, like the first half of it is predominantly about religion and just, you know, identity and stuff. And it like talks about, you know, how, you know, religious people view gay people. And then it goes into like, you know, how they view consumption, like the Disney store, like you're saying, there's such a huge emphasis on that. And then, yeah, just like overall, just like identity and like race was like a big part too. Like, it is just, yeah, it's, and like I was saying earlier, this is another perfect example of like a pre 9/11 New York movie, because, you know, it was, you know, in like the decade before, and you just see kind of just, yeah, how these people are in this environment. And, you know, just like you're saying, like how the transitional period from these mom and pop shops closing and, you know, it being more of like a den for New Yorkers and it turning into like Rudy Giuliani's era and like how, you know, it becomes basically a tourist trap. And it's, yeah, it's very, it's a very good documentary. It caught me by surprise. I want you to, can you talk about how you pitched it to me the other day? Because you set up an amazing pitch for me about like the guy who is like Jesus the rock star.
Yeah. I mean, there's some great, like you're saying, like caricatures, like of all the different people, and they all have like some pretty extreme views one way or another. Some views I've never really heard before. Yeah. I like the way you put it, that it, from a takeaway standpoint, like it's a mosaic. And for me, it's not really about like the individual views, more that like we're compiling this collection of a space where everyone feels like they can speak about what they believe, like what God they believe in, mm-hmm. whether it's a God or whether they just believe in science. There's this really awesome guy who's like, by sitting here, I can like see atom flow and atom movement, and I understand energy flows by sitting yes. here in Times Square. And he feels like he's really learned something from just wow. observing Times Square from like a scientific standpoint. Wow. And so everyone's like is getting these huge takeaways from New York. An iconic one that I feel like a lot of people talk about, and that was the one that I was telling Zach about earlier, is this guy, and he's like, Jesus has returned, basically. Oh, yeah. I don't want to say too much, but Jesus is back on earth, and we're going to kind of like see him like come into rise and come into power soon. And I think Richard Sandler does a great job at prompting people. Yes. He's pretty funny. Like, he's really like going back and forth with them. He debates a couple of times, with some of the subjects of his interviews, mm-hmm. which I think is pretty cool in a documentary style. Like yeah. you don't really get to hear that a lot, but it's very casual, very street style. Like he's a street photographer and director. So he's conversing with them and you hear what he's having to say. It's not just like, oh, the audience is inferring like what question he asked. And then we just yeah. get to see their answer. Like he's going back and forth. And so he's like, oh, okay. Like, can you tell me more about that? And he's basically, this guy's like, well, I know that Jesus is back because I live with him and I can't really speak too much on that. And Richard Sandler's like, do you live with him or do you share the same body? And the guy's like, I can't say anymore. Yeah. I can't say anymore. He's basically gatekeeping the fact that he does believe that Jesus like lives in him.
Yeah.
And that he will soon marry Madonna and yeah. rise wow. to fame in Madonna's realm of fame and yeah. also get like a triple platinum yes. record.
It's like a year from now, I'm gonna get a big pop hit, marry Madonna. We're so back.
Yeah.
Walk Jesus. On water too. You know?
Yeah, Jesus is so back.
Yeah. And then like later on in the movie, he like meets up again with him and he's like...
Yeah, which I also, what I love so much about this is he's circling back to these characters. Like,
yeah. yeah.
You see that he keeps meeting with them over time. Like it feels mm-hmm. like over the course of the years that this yeah. movie takes place mm-hmm. over, he's returning to these characters and he say, how do you feel about Times Square now? Like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
where do you see like your religion coming into play with it now? And he really develops this idea. It's not just like a static, this is what everyone believes in this year.
Yeah,
because there's that one character or person who kept showing up throughout the entire movie. He was the guy with the priest collar, mm-hmm. and like Richard was like, hey, like what do I do, you know, how can I be saved? And he's like, the answers are all in here. And he holds up the Quran, and just that imagery of just like, you know, he has the priest collar on mm-hmm. but he's preaching the Quran. Yeah. It's just such an interesting dichotomy. And just like that guy, he shows up, I want to say like 6 or 7 times throughout the movie.
Wow.
And he, the entire time he keeps just dropping like cryptic truth bombs of just like how he sees the world. But it's so interesting. Like he really, you know, pulls you into his ideology. And like you were saying, mm-hmm. Lily, how, you know, Richard kind of, he allows them to flow. He allows yeah. them to just, he gives them the tools to just say what they need to say what they believe. Mm-hmm. And it's just such an interesting portrait of just, you know, identity and religion in this one little nook mm-hmm. in the biggest city in the world. Like it's...
And that's what I love most about it. I think it's tying in, like, everyone in this area has this personal identity, but it's coming back to the fact that they live in this shared space, in this public space, and they keep returning to it. And so what happens to this space, like what happens to Times Square or what could happen to any neighborhood in New York or any neighborhood in the world, is going to have an impact on personal identity. And that's where it comes back to this capitalist like transformation.
Yeah.
And you're thinking about, okay, I know all these characters, I know how they interact with each other in this kind of like dynamic like community. And I don't know, it makes you question like what is going to change with that as the physical environment mm-hmm. changes over time to kind of like not so much small businesses and family run businesses. Like a big focus is this family who can't also pass on to generations yeah. of this like family business that's been with them for so long, but it's kind of no more. What mm-hmm. happens to all of these physical environments and how will this impact like the community? Oh. Anyway.
Wow.
I really liked it.
I loved it. It's
two glowing reviews. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. It's on the Criterion channel. If you have that. Yeah. It is very much like, yeah, it's a snapshot mm-hmm. Of a moment of time. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's so enlightening. It's great. So thank you for turning me on to that one. It was really good.
It was cool. And I think it moved me away from what I'm typically used to in New York movies. And I'll circle back to that now because, what I am used to is New York is like the set, the place of all places for rom-coms. Also, what I found, mm-hmm. it's this place that is often associated with like the creative,
yes, mm-hmm.
and also a place for the inner child. And I think these are some reoccurring things that I see come up again and again in some of the movies I'll focus on and we will focus on. So the next mm-hmm. one I want to talk about is Home Alone 2 Lost in New York.
Yes.
Just in time for Christmas.
Exactly. Yeah, seriously.
I think honestly, I prefer this one to the original.
Wow. I know.
It might be a hot take, but
I agree.
I think I've seen the first like 35 minutes of Home Alone. Like, it's like one of those movies where it's like, you know, week before winter break,
yes,
teacher's got no idea what to put on. Fuck it, Home Alone.
Yeah.
And it's like, I can't watch like Kevin like wake up and his mom at the airport like realizing he's at home. It's like, I can't do it again.
I've only heard the line, keep your change, you filthy animal, so many times.
Exactly. You know. Before it starts to grate on you. But yeah. Home Alone 2. Yeah, I think the, like, kind of putting it in this, like, wider setting and then still having, like, the overall theme of the movie work, just, like, having this, like, kid, mm-hmm. you know, wandering around this place that's, like, normally so grown up and, like, how a kid would occupy that space, I think is so interesting. Like, even, like, how he treats, like, you know, this, like, hotel room. He's just, like, mm-hmm. ordering, like, pizza and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, that's one thing I always think when I watch it. It's like, oh my goodness, this kid's parents' like credit card is like suffering throughout this entire movie.
That is not the point. You have to invest, just fully take on this role of like, oh my gosh, I'm a kid in New York. And I think that was like pivot point. He gets to New York, he's all alone. He's like, oh my God, where is my mom? Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm all alone and my family's in Florida and I'm in New York. Oh my God, I'm all alone. My family's in Florida and I'm in New York. And he starts to get excited about
it. At Christmas time, nonetheless.
Yeah.
I feel like that's like New York at Christmas, like in the movies, is there's so much like iconic imagery with it. Like there's so many mm-hmm. specific images. Like you think of like, oh, like skating at the Rockefeller Center,
yes.
like all these like Macy's storefronts. It's just like something about it feels like so quintessentially holiday-esque. It's like, God, I need to go out. I need to like buy something, you know?
Well, there's another like Christmas classic that takes place in New York, Elf.
Yeah.
With you know, when he first gets to New York and he's like, you know, oh, best coffee in the city. Let's go, guys. You did it. You know, but yeah, like you were saying, it is a very quintessential, you know, holiday setting for certain movies. And yeah, like Lost in New York is just very much like it embraces that as a, as a film, you know.
Oh yeah. I feel like it's gotten to the point where it's almost like lazy now. It's like, oh, you just you know, show some shots of like the Empire State Building, slap some like any Christmas song, slap Mariah Carey over that, and it's like,
oh my goodness,
instant hit.
Yeah, out of hibernation.
No, I love this movie. And also, I think what was so special about watching this young, which I feel like mm-hmm. I wish I could experience that again, of like the magic of seeing something and really like putting in this place of like living the dream of being a kid in New York City and getting to do whatever you want. Like you were saying, mm-hmm. he's just getting all of that magic for himself. But also, I think it really takes on the kid's perspective as well,
yeah,
in terms of his fears. Like, were we not all like so afraid of being kidnapped? Like, I feel like that was like a huge,
yeah,
like, oh, made, yeah, out to be a way bigger fear.
Yeah.
Or like,
no, no, I once got lost in the store once. You couldn't find my mom. That was traumatizing enough. I can't imagine being lost in New York, oh, like that. Yeah. And just like,
or
you
when
know.
He's in the park and he's trying to run away because he's scared of Pigeon Lady, who he doesn't need to be, but right, his foot gets caught. Like, is that not complete like kid nightmare of like, yeah, you're moving in slow motion, you can't get your foot caught, and you're being chased, like,
mm-hmm,
in every dimension they're working from the kid's perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the same with the first Home Alone too, where there's the old guy, and like, mm-hmm, he was kind of building him up as like the villain, and like every time you'd see him he'd just be like scared shitless, but, yeah, like, you know, growing up you'd have those people, you know, like in your neighborhood or like, yeah, something like that. You'd just see them here and be like, whoa.
Yeah.
And you like, you'd get to know them and be like, oh, this guy's not too, yeah, happy.
Just some guy.
Yeah, he's just a guy, you know. Yeah.
Anyway, I think Chris Columbus is the director, and just, it's perfectly captures like, mm-hmm, okay, like, he must have interviewed some kids. Okay, what would you do the most? Oh, I'd get like 3 scoops of ice cream and sit in bed all day. What would you be so afraid of when you're, yeah, like lost in the dark in Central Park or whatever? And it's just perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great one.
It is. Those are 2 wildly different,
I know,
books in New York, I think. Mine are definitely more in line with the last 2, I think. For,
yeah,
me, I was kind of in a similar boat as you, Zach, where it's like, oh, so many movies I like are like in New York.
Right.
But then like thinking about movies that really, like, for me, I think built up how I see New York were very much Night at the Museum,
yes,
and Muppets Take Manhattan.
Yes.
And I think Night at the Museum is interesting because it's kind of the first post 9/11 movie that we've talked about. So,
yeah,
it's, you get this like view of New York where it's very much like, you know, it's all about like what can happen, you know, like, mm-hmm, even Night at the Museum 2, Larry gets his like the clicker, you know,
right,
it's like, it's all about like this potential for like something to happen. Like really getting this shift towards New York as like aspirational instead of this thing as like kind of like gritty and like dark that you, mm-hmm, see with like Taxi
grounded
Driver
in reality, yeah, you know. No, there's gonna be a giant skeleton T-Rex running around,
exactly,
and you know, oh, and there's Teddy Roosevelt, you know,
yeah,
it's Robin Williams.
Yeah, rest, the ensemble peace cast is crazy,
yeah,
young Rami Malek,
yeah. God, you got Owen Wilson running around in
Owen
there.
Owen Wilson.
So, right, much fun.
Steve Coogan.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, I know the directors talked, like, at length, like, how difficult it was sometimes just to, like, from a practical standpoint, like, shoot scenes. Because, mm-hmm, there were just so many characters that, like, he wanted to capture,
yeah,
in there. It's like, sometimes you just had to go in purely analytical. Like, there could be no art to it. It's like, how do we physically fit, like, 12 bodies in this frame?
Yeah, all from different, like, walks of life, because, yeah, it's just like, yeah, like it's the Smithsonian or okay, well, it's a museum. I don't think the Smithsonian's, yes, in Washington.
Yeah,
it's,
that's number 2.
It's, yeah, that's
the
number 2.
American,
right,
Museum of Natural History.
Yeah, and but this one, it's like, yeah, you get like, you know, like Lewis and Clark, and you get like, you know, all the animals, and you get, you know, like Attila the Hun, and you get like a big Easter Island head, and then,
yeah,
you get the Egyptians, and you get like, you know, the miniature Romans versus the miniature cowboys, you know,
yep,
it's there's just all these different things that just kind of, it's just such a perfect setting to let them just all work together,
yeah,
so cohesively,
yeah,
you know, and it's a great, great kids movie too.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
I remember watching the shit out of this one as a kid and just being like, yeah, this is it.
Oh, yeah.
No, this is it.
This is very much like a movie like me and my sister both adore. So it's like whenever I'm home, we need like a quick nostalgia hit. Night at the Museum DVD,
yeah,
is getting cracked out. We, mm-hmm, are playing that. That, and yeah, I feel like even Muppets Take Manhattan, like anything Muppets for me will always just be 5 stars and a heart on Letterboxd. Like,
nice.
I don't care what you're presenting me as long as there's Kermit in it. 5 stars and a heart. But like this movie in particular is really interesting because basically, like, the end scene is, like, you know, Kermit and his piggy get married, and they cut to the audience, and it's a huge reveal. They've got all the Muppets, but not just from, like, the Muppets franchise. They've got Muppets from, like, Fraggle Rock and, like, Sesame Street. Like, Big Bird is at the ceremony.
Really?
Yeah. Which is crazy, because it's kind of...
It's all Jim Henson, right?
Yeah, it's all Jim Henson.
How'd they get Big Bird?
Like,
the budget was,
I know,
crazy.
Well, they couldn't get... They were supposed to have Michael Jackson in the film.
Oh, my God.
But he dropped out.
He wanted to do Men in Black 2 instead.
They had to choose between Michael Jackson and Big Bird.
Yeah, all the money went towards Big Bird.
Yeah.
real diva on set, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But,
we're about 2 million of the budget.
My gosh. But yeah, no, this movie, I think it's situated at a really interesting point, like mid 80s. So it's like you're kind of like the original, like viewers of the Muppet Show are very much like growing up. Like these are parents now, but like kids are kind of also starting to come into Muppets. So you're seeing this kind of interesting intersection, I think, with The Muppets Take Manhattan, where you get like, yeah, the parents can kind of watch for something too. And I think that final scene really like, like it's like the end of childhood, you know? It's like, oh, finally Kermit and Miss Piggy are married. And like, you know, here's all the favorite Muppets from all your different franchises that you grew up watching. It's like a little nod to the viewers.
But
it walked so Avengers Endgame could run.
This was my Avengers Endgame. I don't even care. Like, this was huge. But yeah, I think we do all have a movie, though, that we have seen about New York. And I love this movie. I love it. It is Frances Ha, which is a 2012 comedy drama directed by Noah Baumbach. So our most recent film.
Mm-hmm.
It is starring Greta Gerwig as Frances Halliday and Mikey Sommer as Sophie Levy. It follows Frances, an aspiring dancer who moves to New York.
Yeah.
Which sounds so vague, and so much happens under that that it's just insane. God, because like, when did you guys first see this movie?
I saw it years ago for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like it.
Really?
I didn't like it the first time. I thought it was just kind of boring, you know. It just didn't do it for me. I probably wasn't in the right mindset. But then a couple years passed, watched it again, loved it. You know, any movie that has a prominent David Bowie song in it, and she's just running through it. I believe that's like a reference to this other movie called Mavis's song or Mauvais song or something like that. It's like this French one. But, you know, like, oh, like, I'm just such a big David Bowie fan that, like, anytime there is, like, a reference or just, like, something prominent of him in it, and it's just, they take it and they do something with it. It's just excellent. So her just running down the street, you know, dancing, doing jetés or, you know, twirls or whatever while, like, Modern Love is playing. It's just, like, that is such a... that's just an awesome, awesome scene. And I do think about it and rewatch it from time to time because it's just such a lovely thing to see. But yeah, just like that's another one where it's just like I love how it's all black and white.
Yeah.
It's shot so well, but like you still kind of feel the city in it, you know, even though like all these other movies have been, you know, I guess very vibrant, very colorful and just like treat New York as like its own character, and this one does it but like in its own way. And you know, just like smoking on a fire escape, or you know, like just the way she interacts with the city is just very it's very interesting. It's very well done. So yeah, what about you, Lily?
I love it. I saw it, I actually don't really know, a few years ago. I liked it the first time around and I just rewatched it for the episode, but I think what stuck with me is it kind of joins a collection of films that take on New York as this center for the creative mind and like unconventional career path. But it takes a pretty unique stance on that. I think like in a lot of movies, like, I don't know. So there's like Tick, Tick, Boom, or even like The Devil Wears Prada and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Like these are rom-coms, but they're women in unconventional or like more artistic like career paths.
Yeah.
Even Night at the Museum, like Larry's moving between jobs.
Yeah.
And he wants, like, he's an aspiring inventor. So, the creative path as well. And New York being kind of a center to go to when, like, you want to make it in this, like, creative labor force. And a lot of times, like, something miraculous happens. Like, you get that promotion in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, and, like, you finally make it, whatever. And this movie, Frances Ha, like, it just felt so much more grounded in the sense that, even though it's set with this dreamy backdrop of New York, and she's often like trying to describe things as magic throughout the movie, at the heart of it, like we've got this clumsy, realistic, like quirky, grounded story. And I think that like strikes a lot of chords with people who are like, I'm going to make it huge in New York or wherever I am. But she's just kind of like living kind of an ordinary life in a way.
Yeah.
And she's relatable, but also like insufferable, which makes her even more relatable, which I just love so much. And I think one other thing for like in terms of New York is this movie to me is all about movement. She's moving between jobs. She's moving between apartments. So she's moving like physically, but she's also moving in like more of a broader sense. Like she's growing up. She's like trying to balance this life of like still having this inner child like contained within herself. She even says like, oh, I'm sorry. Like I'm not a full person yet. But she's also trying to navigate this world in which like more and more of her friends are trying to do grown-up jobs and live a grown-up life. And so it's very dynamic in that way, like moving physically, but also growing as a person.
Yeah.
In the land of opportunity, so they say, nonetheless,
Like, I feel like it really captures this like transition point between like being a teenager and being like a full adult, and like how much just stuff comes with that that you don't even think about. Like I know like there's one point where she's like, oh, I'm not messy, I'm just busy. And it's like, oh, but when do you stop being busy? So like, you know, sit down and like vacuum the carpets or something, or clean out the dishwasher. And it's like just adds, like, I feel like I watched this movie, I saw it really recently, like it was like summer, I think last summer, that I'd seen it for like the first time. It was one of those movies where I was like, oh, okay, this was like the perfect time to watch this movie. Like I accidentally timed it so great. So I feel like even like, you know, I'm not as old as the character in the film, but like a lot of the themes of kind of like, you know, getting older and realizing that like maybe this grace period where you're allowed to be messy is kind of coming to an end, and like you have to really like, you know, lock in and like start to go like look for a job or like find like a stable like housing situation, that sort of thing. And it's not like fun and quirky to be kind of stuck in this messy middle anymore. It's like it's embarrassing, you know. And it's like all your friends are moving out and getting married and they're all growing up, and it's like, oh my god, like how did my parents do it, you know? Like how did they get this done? But I know that Bombeck has talked about like how shooting New York in black and white kind of made him see the city with new eyes. I think like that's a really interesting look at the movie, because I feel like there's some times where like it just feels like any other like metropolitan center, like you're watching and, you know, you can't see like the bright lights of Times Square or whatever, or, like the iconic green of the Statue of Liberty. And it's like, oh, this could be anywhere, like this can be anyone. So like it really adds to like the universality of everything that they're kind of going for in this film. But I really, I really love Frances Ha. I think it's such a great film, and like I have to rewatch this like as soon as possible.
I love the ending of it too.
Yeah,
I think it like drives home like a major, this major idea of like, yeah, like wanting to reach this like final ending point of being an adult and being full and being complete. But at the end of the day, like, I don't know, like what is like completion? Like what is like your whole self? Like, your whole self still contains your childhood self and all that. And that's kind of the end. Like her last name's not Ha, but it's kind of an incomplete version of that.
Right. Yeah.
She just couldn't fit it all in there practically. And that's okay. I guess that's what I took away.
No, exactly. Yeah. It's growing up is different for everyone, you know, being your full self is something different for different people. So, yeah, I mean, it's, it's a great movie. It's something I need to rewatch too, because I haven't seen it in like 2 years, but from what I remember, it's just, like it's something that really like hits close to home in that sense of just like growing up and being at that stage in your, you know, early and mid 20s where you're like, okay, it's, we're entering the real world now. Like free trial's over, guys.
Oh yeah. Well, that has been our episode, guys. Can't believe it, but we are at the end of time. So I hope everyone listening enjoyed all of these New York movies. I know I did. I'm walking away with this with like 12 more movies to add to my watch list. And yeah, any final closing thoughts? We round this out.
New York, New York.
New York.
Thanks
New
for
York.
Coming on, Zach.
Thanks for having me. I hope to be back soon.
Oh, I'm sure.
Always love it on this.
Absolutely. Well, see you guys next week, same time, 4 to 5, Real World CITR. All right. See ya.